We've been, the last few weeks, the last 2 weeks, we've been going through a little bit of a homily series for Lent. 2 weeks ago, we talked about, it's been basically, what we've been doing is trying to break down just the teaching on the Eucharist. Because the reality is, is that a lot of Catholics, whether myself, whether it be somebody who might be just coming back to church, might be somebody who hasn't been to church in a long time, baptized and maybe never goes to church, right? A lot of Catholics, a lot of us, I think sometimes we assume that we know a lot about the faith, a lot about kind of the background and why we do what we do. But if nobody explicitly says it or nobody explicitly teaches it, then what can happen is that we can maybe assume sometimes and miss what's actually going on, right? 2 weeks ago, the first homily of our series was on the theme of worship. And what we did was is basically we gave a half-hour homily. And why? Just to get down to a very simple thing, two simple statements as our conclusions. Number one, that God is the only one worthy of our worship. And number two, that God is the one who dictates how we worship, right? So God is the only one worthy of our worship, and God dictates how we worship. The second thing, the second week that we did, last week, was on sacrifice. So God is the one who dictates how we worship, and he says, I want you to offer sacrifice. And we're going to get into a particular sacrifice today. But to have a sacrifice, we need four things. The first thing we need is a something to sacrifice, an offering. The second thing we need is a someone to do the sacrificing. That's a priest. The third thing is we need a place, an altar. And the last thing is that we need to consume the sacrifice, either by eating it or burning it, right? So that's an hour of preaching in a matter of about a minute. So hopefully we can keep rolling today, right? In the Old Testament, right? So most of what we celebrate, most of what we practice, most of what we do is not 2,000 years old when it comes to the Mass. Most of what we celebrate, most of what we do actually finds its root in 4,000 years ago, going all the way back to the Old Testament, right? Going all the way back to Abraham and Moses and on and on and on through the Old Testament. Well, today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about a particular sacrifice in the Old Testament. And it's the most important of all the sacrifices for the Jewish people. And I personally believe that today, if we understand the roots of where our Mass comes from, then it will change the way that we approach a Mass forever. We'll never approach the Mass the same way again. I know for me personally that this was this teaching. Like when the first time I heard it, it was like scales fell from my eyes. And all of a sudden it was like, wow, this is completely different. And since then, I've never walked into Mass the same way again. So trust me. As we go into today, though, what we have to do is we have to have a little bit of context of the Passover, right? So if we look at the book of Genesis, we hear about all these different, we hear about creation, we hear about Noah, we hear about all this stuff in the book of Genesis, the Abraham covenant that was made with Abraham and God, right? Abraham's great-grandson, if I'm not mistaken, I think I did the math right, but his great-grandson had a bunch of sons. One of his sons' name was Joseph. He was the youngest of a bunch of brothers, and what happens is that Joseph is, if you've ever seen Joseph in a Technicolor Dreamcoat, that's basically the story, right? And if you don't know what that is, go watch it next time it comes to the Sanger Theater. It is fantastic. But anyway, Joseph is the youngest of a bunch of sons, and Joseph is this one son that's beloved, and he gets basically kind of ousted by his brothers. They're jealous of him being his father's, like the pride and joy of his dad. And what they do is they're going to murder him. Well, they don't murder him. Instead, they're just going to leave him for dead. He ends up finding his way into Egypt. He then rises the ranks in Egypt. He becomes the right-hand man to Pharaoh. And he's the one who's in charge of giving and receiving all of the goods of Egypt. His brothers don't know this. His brothers are back at home, and a famine hits their land, a famine hits their people, and what happens is that they all run to Egypt because they're hungry and they need food. When they get to Egypt, they don't even realize that they're talking to their brother. Joseph shows mercy to his own family, and the book of Genesis ends with this really, really profound story of mercy and forgiveness and love. Well, what happens is the Hebrew people end up in Egypt. Now, Egypt has its own belief system. Egypt has its own structure. Egypt has its own culture. Egypt has, it's completely different than where the Jewish people were. But they find themselves now in Egypt. And for 400 years, the Israelite people are in Egypt. And what happens is over that 400 years, they start to acquiesce to the Egyptian culture a little bit more and a little bit more every generation. 400 years, they're in Egypt, and 400 years, they acquiesce a little bit more and give up a little bit more. They also populate. They also expand. It's not just one family. It's a lot of people. And as this lot of people are starting to grow more and more and more, the Egyptians start to push them down in their power and in their influence. And what happens? They end up becoming enslaved to the Egyptians. Now, my first year as a priest, I'm from Raceland. As you know, I graduated from Central Lafourche High School. Go Trojans, right? I'm from Raceland. I graduated from there. My first year as a priest, I was placed in Cutoff, Louisiana. Now, if you don't know about this area, Central Lafourche and South Lafourche are massive rivals. When I moved into my first parish, I'm not going to lie, I walked in, opened the door to my office, and it was decorated with nothing but blue and gray in honor of the Tarpons, right? And I remember walking in and having a little bit of a, I had to swallow my you know what? I was just kind of like, oh, no, this is disgusting, man. Like, this is going to be rough. Well, what I did was to try and prove myself and to try and make sure that, like, the people weren't going to reject me outright, because who wants a Trojan going down to buy it? Ugh, right? Like, what I had to do was I had to start buying, like, South Lafourche gear and putting on a blue hat instead of my green hat, right? And on the game, whenever Central played South, I had to pretend like I was cheering for Central, but they beat South, and then I just got to humble brag a little bit. But anyway, I just remember, like, going through all of this, because all my life I was raised to not like South Lafourche. And now that I'm moving, now that I'm down there, now that I'm a priest for these people, I have to now kind of convert and live along their cultural line. Otherwise, they were going to run me out of town, right? They want to drown Jesus. They want to throw Jesus off a cliff in the Bible, like whenever he's preaching rough to his hometown. I can only imagine what a crazy down to buy a man going to do and making me disappear in a crab trap, right? But anyway. So I just remember this, like, there was, like, it's the same kind of thing that's happening to the people for the Egyptians, the Israelite people for the Egyptians. For 400 years, they have to acquiesce, otherwise they get rejected. It's a move of survival for them. Not just about somebody talking bad about you, or maybe not liking your team, but they won't feed you. You won't be alive. 400 years, they're in slavery. Until here comes along this guy named Moses. And Moses, we hear the story, we know what happens, right? Moses leaves for a little while, he comes back because God sent him in this burning bush and says, I want you to go and set my people free. I don't want my people to be enslaved to the Egyptians. I want my people to be able to come and offer sacrifice to me. Every time Moses says, let my people go, it's not just to get out of slavery. It's let my people go to offer sacrifice, to offer right worship, because God cares about the way and what we do when we worship. Pharaoh doesn't like that. Pharaoh doesn't like that at all. Pharaoh is continually obstinate to Moses, continually saying, no, this is not going to be the case. No, I'm not going to let your people free. And Moses looks at him and says, fine, my God is going to wage war on your gods. Egyptians were polytheistic. They had a bunch of different gods. You ever wondered why there's 10 plagues? If you grab a bulletin for today and you flip to the fifth page of it, you can see a chart of the 10 plagues. God wages war on the gods of the Egyptians. Because God's serious when he says in the first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall not have other gods besides me. None of them are worthy of worship. I am, not them. So God wages war on the Egyptian gods. Now there's a bunch of them here. It's 10. And every one of them has something to do with the Egyptian gods. So for example, the first one, water turns into blood. Well, one of the main gods that the Egyptians would offer sacrifice to, that they would try and satisfy, was the god of the Nile, the biggest river in Egypt. So when God says, I'm going to turn water into blood, not only is he turning the water that's in the Nile into blood, but he's turning all the water that's in every well, he's turning all water in every jar, he's turning all water everywhere in Egypt into blood. You can't drink in the desert. It's his first act to say, I am God, he is not. Hail. He has hail pour down in a desert. Why? Over the crops. Why? Because the sky goddess was one that they would offer sacrifice to. And he was saying, not only are we not going to give you rain, I'm going to do something that's going to hurt your crops. Pestilence of livestock, the fifth plague. This god was usually pictured with the head of a bull. He says, you know, all those animals that look like your god, well, they're going to die. And every time a plague happens, Moses would go and he would say, let my people go. And Pharaoh would say, no. You bring in this on yourself, fine. And he would go back out and another plague. Over and over and over again, 9 times this happens. And Pharaoh continues to remain obstinate, saying, no, we have the right answer. You people don't. Then comes the 10th plague. The 10th plague was the death of the firstborn. Now that might seem extreme. That might seem like, wow, this rose really, really quickly. We went from crops and water to now you're killing people. Like, whoa, this is a bit much. But if you have a bulletin, who was the god that was being attacked? It was Pharaoh. Why? The pharaohs saw themselves as deities. They saw themselves as living deities. They saw themselves as being able to hand on their deifying the next generation and the next generation that they had been sent by God. They were deities that were incarnate, and they could hand on down and down and down again to the next generation their deity isms, right? Like they could hand on their own deification down to the next generation. So the death of the firstborn is God saying, and we're going to make this very, very personal to you. Now that might seem extreme. But what Moses does is that what God does is he tells the Israelite people, he says, I want to show you, I want to reveal to you how it is that you can be saved from this final plague. Because people that are truly believers of me, they are going to do this. And the people that aren't, then the Spirit of God is going to come and there will be the death of the firstborn. Enter in the Passover sacrifice. What we would find is, there are 3 key elements about the Passover, right? The first is that the blood of the Lamb will set them free. What we hear in Scripture is that every person had to bring a lamb. So this is what it says in Exodus 12, verse 21. Moses summoned all of the elders of Israel and said to them, go and procure lambs for your families and slaughter the Passover victims. Now, this language is very important, right? Because remember, what are the things necessary for a sacrifice? First, we have to have an offering. Slaughter the Passover victims. These are the victims are the lambs. The lambs are the offering. We need a priest. We need someone to do the sacrificing, right? So Moses summoned all of the elders. This word would translate later on into priest, right? Altar, we need a sacred place to do it. They would do it in this one particular place. And then finally, there was a consumption that it had to be eaten. It had to be consumed in some way, which we'll get to in a second. And what he said was, is that after you slaughter all of these lambs, what I want you to do is I want you to catch the blood. Now, if you've ever slaughtered an animal, if you've ever seen an animal be slaughtered, there's a lot of blood. What I want you to do is I want you to catch the blood. And then I want you to take the blood and I want you to take a sprig of hyssop and I want you to basically paint over your doorpost with the blood. Moses summoned all of the elders and said, go and procure lambs. Then take a bunch of hyssop and dipping it in the blood that is in the basin, apply some of this blood to the lintel and to doorposts. So he said, basically, over where you walk in, I want you to sprinkle blood. And the way the Passover worked was when the Spirit of God was coming through Egypt, as the Spirit of God was coming through, when it saw blood over these doorposts, when it realized that a faithful person of the Almighty, a faithful person of Yahweh, someone who was following the real God, when he saw that this home was a practicing that faith, they passed over to the next. And the next morning, the firstborn was not just humans. It was the first of anything born. Your first cow, your first dog, your first whatever, everything was gone. Because the household, the blood of the lamb, is what set the people free. Now the second part of this, the second key to the Passover, is that not only were we going to slaughter the lamb, right? God's not wasteful. Not only are we going to slaughter the lamb, but the sacrifice, right, the Passover, is going to be connected to a meal. The fourth element of a sacrifice, right? You have to consume the sacrifice. They will take some of the blood and apply it to the doorpost and lintel of the house in which they eat it. They will consume its meat that same night, eating it roasted with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Now, the reason why God is giving them the recipe of how he wants it cooked was because there was some times that the Egyptians also would offer lambs. When they would offer lambs to, there were times that they would offer lambs to their quote-unquote small g gods. But when they would do it, what they would do is they would boil the lamb. And God is saying, no, I don't want you to confuse what you used to do with what I'm asking you to do. I want you to do it in a particular way. I'm gonna go so far as to give you the recipe of how I want you to cook the lamb. Because I don't want you, one, to confuse it with the old sacrifice, and two, this is extremely important to me. Now, I grew up in South Louisiana. My dad, I love him to death, but my dad is an OCD beyond belief. I'm just letting you know about this, right? When I was a student at LSU, and my dad would not let me mow the grass, right? Because he had a particular way that he liked to do things. And if I did things not the particular way that he liked to do things, then I was going to get in trouble, and he would try and go back and do it again, right? So, like, mowing the grass, I remember I was 10 years old, and I asked my dad, I'm like, hey, Dad, can I mow the grass? Now, some people are looking at me like, I would dream my kid would do that. But anyway, my dad, not so much. I remember he says, no, let me make a couple of rounds first in the yard. And he made a round, and he made another round, and he made another round, and he made another round. And then finally, my mom walked up to him, flagged him down, and said, if you don't get off the thing, he's not going to have anything to cut, right? Because, like, they wanted to teach me responsibility and all these kind of things. My mom did. My dad, on the other hand, OCD, and has his particular way of how he wants it done, right? Love you, Dad. Sorry. But anyway, the reason why, though, is because when things are done, when he has a particular way and a particular place and a particular way that he likes to do things, it's because it's important to him. He's got his details down to the finest detail. Why? Because it's important to him. When God is giving these directives and God is giving detail upon detail upon detail upon detail, it's supposed to strike us as, wow, this is really important to God. And remember, God is the one that dictates how we worship, not us. So, first, the blood of the lamb will set the people free. Secondly, the Passover is meant, the Passover is meant to be connected to a meal. It has to be consumed. And the third thing, and this I think is one of the most mind-blowing pieces of all of this. There's an importance with the word memorial. Now, when we hear about memorial, we might think of a World War II memorial, right? Something like in honor of people. We might think of Veterans Memorial Highway, Memorial Stadium somewhere, right? Like, there's a lot of things that we say memorial for. When the Jew heard the word memorial, it has a very, very particular definition, a very, very particular way of looking at this. What a memorial is, when they hear the word memorial, it's making present today something that happened in the past. Okay? You will keep this practice forever as a statute of yourselves and your descendants. Thus you will have entered the land which the Lord will give you as he promised. You must observe this rite. This is what God is telling the Israelite people. And he's saying, you will keep this practice forever. And you will do this in memorial every year forever. How long are they going to do it? One more time. How long are they going to do it? Forever. They're not stopping. Forever means every year. It doesn't matter if it's 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, 1,000 years. Every year, forever, you will keep this statute. You will keep this practice. And what's happening is that this is making present in the today was an event that happened in the past. Now, use an example. Today, when I was a kid, it was like always when baseball season would come up. Today, me and my dad we went to Rotolo's for lunch. He paid, thank you. But anyway, when we went for lunch today, we were sitting around talking, and we saw a bunch of kids with like baseball uniforms going in and out, right? Because lunchtime, baseball tournaments are happening, and I can't help but like when it gets to this time of year. Baseball has always been like a big part of our family, big part of my life. I love baseball. There are certain songs, there are certain smells, there are certain like tastes and things like that. The smell of Florida water automatically brings me back to the ballpark, right? The taste of sunflower seeds automatically brings me back to the ballpark. There's one thing in particular that more than anything brings me back to playing baseball, and that is the song Maggie May by Rod Stewart. And some people are looking at me like, first of all, I don't know who Rod Stewart is. But Maggie May from the Unplugged album from 1993, all right? Every time I hear that song, it gets me in the mood for baseball. Wake up, Maggie, I think I got something to say to you. If you don't know the song, go look it up. It's amazing, right? The reason why, though, is because from the time I could remember playing, I still remember, like, every day, this is what an afternoon when we had a game looked like. Every day, come home from school, 4 o'clock, we're leaving for the field. So do your homework before, get whatever you got to get done before, be ready to go, dressed on the step with my bat bag, ready to roll. White Chevrolet pickup truck pulls up. Dad runs inside, changes real quick into his coach's outfit, and we are on the road for 4 o'clock. As we're getting in, I throw my batting bag in the back of the truck, right? Dad goes around, we jump in, we go to take off. Sitting in a 1994 Chevrolet pickup truck, white, old company truck. We sit down, got the green lights with the little block letters, right? Square numbers and buttons on the dashboard. White cassette tape sticking out. And if you don't know what a cassette tape is, it was this thing that we used to have to rewind. And whenever it would, like, pull out, you had to, like, get a pencil. If you don't know what rewind is, then ask somebody. But anyway, all right, so what we would do, we would get in the truck. And as we're pulling out the driveway, what happens? Push the white cassette tape in. And sure enough, you hear those first words. Wake up, Maggie, I think I got something to say to you. It's late September and I really should be back at school. Oh, I love this. But as we were driving, we had that, then the song Reason to Believe. And right about the time that second song ended, we were just pulling into the parking lot of the ballpark. To this day, 34 years old, to this day, when I hear that version of that song come on my radio, I could be, it's almost as if I'm transported. 6 years old, Blue Jays t-shirt, batting bag in the back, Chevy pickup truck, and Rod Stewart on my way to the ballpark. We know about this concept of memorial. We know what it feels like. Because then in your family, in your life, there are smells, there are sights, there are sounds, there are different things that bring you back to something. And for the Jews, the Passover makes present today something that happened in the past. Whether we realize it or not, when we come to Mass, we memorialize the Last Supper. We make present in the past, we make present in the now something that happened in the past. Like whether you realize it or not, in a few minutes when we start the Liturgy of the Eucharist, we're not going to be in Thibodaux, Louisiana anymore. We're not only going to be transported to Jerusalem, we're going to be transported all the way back 2,000 years ago to the moment when Jesus Christ himself said the words of consecration. This is my body given up for you. And what he's going to do is he's going to say it through a new offering, the bread and wine, through a new priesthood, me, through a new altar here. And what we're going to do is we're going to consume the new sacrifice. Passover doesn't stop because it has to be done forever. And Jesus paved the way for that Passover to be done forever, for always, for you. That's why I find every time when we think of the questions from around COVID and everything, like all these different things that we've gone through in the last 5, 6, 7 years of just all of the, from Hurricane Ida to COVID to all these things, to online masses, to not having church, all these kind of things. Like, there's been so many questions about why it is that we have to go to Mass. And quite honestly, it's because you can't do that online. You can't do that on a live stream. You can't do that by just kind of listening to a homily on a podcast. You can't do it. You cannot memorialize the sacrifice without coming to church and consuming the sacrifice. Because if there is a preacher that's more powerful than that, if there is a band somewhere that's more powerful than that, if there is a Protestant church that's ready to go that's more powerful than that, then sign me up too. But until someone finds something that's more powerful than memorializing the very Paschal mystery that we celebrate with the same God that has continued forever to be with his people and continued to come through and continued to promise that his presence would be with his people, then I'm not going anywhere. This is what we've come to celebrate today. We come to celebrate a new sacrifice. Right after the words of consecration. Therefore, as we celebrate the memorial of his death and resurrection, we offer you, Lord, the bread of life and the chalice of salvation. The words of consecration that we say, take this, all of you, and drink from it. Take this, all of you, and eat of it. Take this, all of you, and drink from it, for this is the chalice of my blood, the blood of the new and everlasting covenant, new and everlasting, forever, which will be poured out for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Do this in memory. Do this in memorial of me. It never stops. And it makes present today something that happened in the past. Today, as we come to Mass, may we come to receive the Eucharist like we never have before, recognizing where we are and who we meet. Because Jesus is making present in the past, present today, something that happened in the past. He's coming to meet us directly, and he'll continue to do it forever.